All right. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the On Death podcast, a podcast where we explore the oftentimes taboo topics of death, dying, and grief. We offer people a place to gather and listen to others around their experience with death and dying. We aim to encourage and support a healthy relationship with death and to move from a fear-based culture of death denial to a community focused on living life fully, more alive, and more in love. I am your host, Matthew. I am a death and grief doula, a yoga teacher, and a kirtanwala. And like always, I'm joined with Tom, who is the co-host. Tom is an excellent photographer, a death doula himself, and a men's group facilitator. Tom, nice to see you.
Hey, what's up, Matthew?
I know it's been a while. Tom and I had a lot of major life happenings going on, and we didn't forget about the podcast, but we did take a little sidestep, huh?
Yeah.
let's catch up. I want to bring the viewers up to speed, and at the tail end, the middle of tail end of the episode, I want to talk about three things that we, meaning you two, can do to support others in grief. And there'll be really three basic, simple, and super potent things that anyone can do, even if it's your first time. But before we go there, tell us, Tom, tell us some big news.
Oh, man. So I was looking back at the history of On Death as I sent it to somebody recently, because I still promote it all the time. I mean, it's still, even though it's been that was it. You know, I was looking back and I was like, wow, the last episode we released was in February of 2022. It's been over a year, and I still talk about it all the time because it's been on my heart and on my mind. And what's also been on my heart and my mind is this new baby that I have. he's almost 10 months old now, and his entry into the world, you know, it feels very distant at this point, given, you know, where he's at now, but it's still worth sharing that he had a pretty rough landing in the world. He didn't come in you know, kittens and rainbows, and it did not feel like a guarantee that he would land in his body. You know, we'd had everything was going really smoothly up until about 30 weeks into the pregnancy, and Margot got COVID, and then the next ultrasound we got, the doctor was like, oh, he looks a little small. And it, up to that point, it was average. And then he's like, why don't you come back in a couple of weeks? In a couple of weeks, we came back. He's like, it hasn't really grown much since last time. And a lot of the growth happens in those last 8 weeks. There's a lot. So we were sort of like, ooh, okay. So we just kept an eye on him. And then we were going back weekly, and they did a lot of tests to make sure that the placenta was doing its job, and he seemed to be getting all the oxygen he needed and all the blood that he needed. So they said, you know, it's best just to not mess with him. And they were expecting he would be born around 5 pounds. Without getting too deep into, you know, the story, I mean, it's a long story of Marco's water breaking early, and it was a tumultuous time. You know, we planned for a home birth. When Margot's water broke, I like busted out the tub and I inflated it, and then there were holes in the tub, and we were like, what? So we put that away, but like Margot's Virgo energy was coming through strong in all of this, and so we had a backup tub and so I pulled that out, inflated that one, and I was like, we're ready, let's do it. And we talked to our midwife and she's like, okay, so your water broke before labor, which is unusual. Only happens to like 10% of women. You have about 48 hours before it's going to become too dangerous to get to have a home birth. When the water breaks, there's a chance of infection that starts to climb the longer it goes on without labor. So after 48, we did everything. We went on like an 8-mile walk through up and down hills trying to get this baby moving. And he just didn't want to come out yet. And this was only, he was only like, he was doing 5 days. So it wasn't tremendously early or anything. The midwife came over. After Margo was having contractions all night, the midwife came over and she looked at Margo and she's like, you're not in labor. Margo's like, but I've been having it. And she's like, you're not in labor. Like, you would not have answered the door if you were in labor. So she was like, you got to go to the hospital. And which was, you know, pretty far down our list of desires was to be in a hospital for this. And, you know, we had also done a practice during this whole pregnancy of like, if we do end up in the hospital, that's okay too. So thankfully we had kept that possibility there. And so going there wasn't really, you know, terrible. And also Margot had said leading up to a few days before, she was so nervous about the home birth that she had said, you know, I almost wish something would happen where I would have to go to the hospital.
Wow.
That way I wouldn't have to deal with like, this fear that I have. And then boom, it happened. So.
Yeah. And you had this little baby boy. I hope I can share that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And probably some moments of, well, I don't know what is at the end of all this, if there will be a baby boy or not.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Before I even go there, I also want to emphasize that have a plan, but be okay not to go according to plan.
Yeah.
And the same thing so is true for birth and death. You know, we see people who really want to die at home. A lot of people don't die at home. Most people want to die at home, but they don't even think it's possible, so they go into the hospital. But then folks who do plan to be home when they die, sometimes things happen. And that's okay. You're not failing at death. It's just like you and Margot, you didn't fail at your birth plan. You needed to take care of your little baby.
Yeah.
And have the best support. So I applaud and commend you for that, because some people, like, they get really rigid in wanting to stick with the plan, and things can go really south.
That's exactly right. You know, we had we got some advice to stay home longer. Somebody said to us, you don't have to go to the hospital. Actually, this person is extreme on the end of home birth. Mm-hmm. And she said, you don't have to go to the hospital. You can wait this out. I've seen people wait it out longer than this. And, you know, had we listened to that person, my son probably would have died. Mm. We talked to, you know, you know, we ended up going from wanting a natural birth in a pool at home to having all of the interventions possible at the hospital. And when we called our original midwife and we said, hey, you know, Margot got to a breaking point. She's like, I can't do this. Just get this baby out, like C-section, whatever it takes. And we called the midwife and she said, don't get a C-section. She said, get an epidural instead and see how you feel. And I mean, hearing this from a midwife who has been doing home births for 40 years, and she's like, get an epidural, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then afterwards she clarified that it's not that she's wildly into home births. She's wildly into natural births. or through the vaginal canal rather. So she's like, do whatever it takes to get that baby out through the canal. That's like a good distinction to make. And there's like science backed health reasons for that. But you know, when this boy was going out, he had every complication. His heart rate was dipping like crazy. And there was a bunch of meconium in the womb, which for those of you that don't know, it's the baby's first poop. And it usually happens as they squeeze through the canal and they sort of like leave it back. But sometimes it happens early. And then, I mean, there's not really like the meconium itself isn't dangerous. It's actually sterile. But the danger is if it's in their mouth and in their airways when they take their first breath and it goes into their lungs, then then it's a problem. So, you know, when he came out, he actually also had the cord wrapped around his neck. And the whole labor was such an ordeal that at that point, Margot was in full bliss around, you know, being able to deliver this baby. Me on the other end of that, I'm watching with, you know, as clear eyes as I can in that moment, where I see a gray baby come out. And this baby is like dark gray. Ugh. And that was my first birth that I witnessed, but I knew that that's not the color of a healthy living being. And he had the cord around his neck, and I was with, they had a team around us because they knew he was small and they weren't sure what was going to happen. And I heard the doctor next to me say, cut the cord immediately. And they snipped the cord, and that was something we wanted. You know, we wanted to like wait and let all the blood transfer to his body and I get to cut the cord and all of that. And the doctor was like, no, cut it now. We need him. So she cut the cord and they started working on him. And I came over to the little table with him and I was standing there next to him, and I'm watching his little gray body, and they're like scooping meconium out of his mouth and they're like putting a mask on his face and pumping, trying to get his lungs going. And I'm standing there and I'm staring through the glass and I'm like, come on, buddy, come on. You can do this. Land in your body. You can do this. And I'm like, I just can't imagine what kind of crazy things that dads do sometimes, you know? And so the doctor was like, hey, you gotta back up. And so I stepped back and I went back with Margot and I put my head on her lap, and she was sort of, you know, in like the intoxication of like oxytocin and adrenaline and all of that. And she's like, are you nervous? Don't be nervous. Everything's fine. It's all good. And I'm like, it is not all good. Watching this kid, and I feel like a candle is just in the wind, you know, like the flame is just fluttering in the wind. Is it going to stay lit or is it going out? And I don't know.
So delicate.
And I even hear the doctor yell, get the crash cart. And at this point I'm like, that's it, you know? And I really felt like, I mean, not that's it, not that he's dying, but like, this is a crux moment is what I felt. And it sort of felt like I had this conversation with God in that moment. Like I really felt God in the room with me there. And he's like, you know, are you going to turn away from this? Or are you going to face this unknown with all this intensity? And at that point, I sort of like, I broke down, you know, and I was like crying. Well, yeah, it wasn't a breakdown. It was just like an emotional release, actually. And I was like, okay, like I'm ready for whatever this is. If this is the only moment I get with my boy, okay. And then I heard him kind of like start choking a little bit, you know, and then I heard the doctor say, oh, he's trying to breathe. And then the cry came, and then he was there, you know, he did it. And I was like, I was like, yeah, you landed in your body. You did it. And then, And then I was like, you know, his name's Abaddon. I was like, Abaddon, come see your mommy and daddy. Come over here and see your mommy and daddy. And he turned his head all the way around and looked across the room and made eye contact with me from 10 feet away, which is something I don't think babies normally do. But he like just locked eyes with me, and they wrapped him up and they brought him over. And he was like eye locked with Margot the whole trip across the room. And they put him down on her chest. I have a moment when she's receiving him and you can see their eyes locked. I photographed it, and it's just like, it's just such a powerful moment. And yeah, I mean, there were lots of mystical things that happened along the way. Like I was reading a Rumi poem, and a photo of me and my grandmother fell out of the book, and she died 3 years ago. I've talked about her on the podcast before, but you know, she died 3 years ago, and to just like for her to show up there and be like, I got you.
Yeah, it was special.
Yeah.
And how delicate the balance of life and death is.
Yeah, I'm feeling that right now, you know.
Yeah. I love hearing the story, Tom. I also want to make a little side note about C-section, because Tom and I actually just found out a couple of days ago that section babies. So I'm only bringing that up because, again, some people, like it sounds like your midwife, has very strong feelings for vaginal birth, but you're listening to two men that were C-section babies and we're okay.
Yeah.
And you know, a dear friend of mine, him and his partner just had a baby last week, and it was emergency C-section. And without going into the details of it, it's not so much my story, but very dicey few months, and really great work by the staff at the hospital to get mom and baby safe and home. And so I just wanted to say that because, like you were saying, some people are very rigid about a way that something has to be done. And we need to be a little flexible. And just
absolutely.
Like you guys
were. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. You know, I see what an amazing technology, you know, like how many babies would we lose if it weren't for C-sections?
Yeah. I mean, you're talking to two, we have two right here.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, like we one of the OBs we saw during this process, he was born at like 20 weeks.
Wow.
Really early. And he was like 1.5 pounds when he was born or something.
Oh,
like
that. That's a tiny baby.
And he's now the most respected OB in Los Angeles. So, you know, like no matter how these things go initially, all of the potential for what comes after is still there in a lot of cases. Obviously, you know, sometimes that's not the case, but in a lot of cases, those first few moments aren't actually, you know, as defining as we imagine them to be. Like he was born, Abaddon was born. They have something called the Apgar score, which is measuring the health and viability of life for a baby when they first come out, and they measure it at 1 minute, 5 minutes, and 10 minutes. Zero is lifeless, no heartbeat, nothing. 10 is perfect health. They almost never give a 10. At 1 minute, he was a 1. And at 5 minutes, he was a 9.
Wow.
Yeah. So even after all of that, 5 minutes into his life, he was incredibly healthy and has been ever since. So that doesn't take away from how incredibly stressful that was.
Well, yeah. I mean, stress, the stress and the trauma, it might only be for you, like a couple minutes or moments even, that doesn't downplay the severity of it.
Yeah.
To you. It's, I know it's been really impactful for you for a while. And
yeah,
sometimes we'll downplay something because it, not saying that you are, but people tend, they can downplay something if it just happens really quickly.
Mm. Right. Yeah. If it's like, oh, but that was just in that case, you know, 24 hours of really sweating it and really, really sweating it only like 3 minutes. Yeah. But yeah, man, I cried every day for weeks after that. I would just be cooking eggs and I'm just crying. Like I just releasing all of that. And, yeah. and in awe of the whole thing. Because being in the room when a soul lands in its body is not that different of a feeling than being in the room when a soul leaves the body.
Yeah. And speaking of which, we launched a podcast in February of 2022. These must have been old ones, and we still have some old ones that we're going to slowly roll out. But in November 12th, 2021, Dracula died. So Dracula, the dog, my dog. Sometimes I just assume that people know who Dracula is, the fictional character. And yeah, he died in my arms, in my home. And, you know, it's interesting just feeling into it in this moment. You know, it's been quite some time. We're filming this, recording this episode, May 25th, 2023. So it's been a chunk of time. And I was thinking about it this morning when we were going to talking about Dracula's death. And sometimes it's very easy for me to talk about, and other times I'm highly emotional.
What's present for you now?
Say again, Tom.
What's present for you right now?
You know, it kind of felt a little bit like a reveal. So there was a moment where it was like, ooh, I was coming up with some like sadness bubble that was kind of creeping in. Just sometimes to say it. Other times I can say it fine. Mm-hmm. And the only reason I'm talking about it like that is to bring this awareness for those of us who are grieving that sometimes when we talk about our loved ones who have died, it's feels okay for us. Other times our heart gets super tender. Mm. And potentially one of the reasons why it's a little tender for me in this moment is I'm sitting very close to where it all happened. Mm. You know, mere feet. And I'm actually sitting probably in the exact spot where we had the whole next day. And we decorated Dracula and sang him songs and brought him flowers and incense. And people came to pay some respect and love to him. Mm. And yeah, you know, I don't have kids. I just had this dog who had been with me by my side for so many adventures. I mean, this dog went all over the US with me, down the Florida, Georgia. We drove across country together. We flew across country together. He had such an incredible, adventurous life. Mm-hmm. And you know, I think about him every single day. One of the first things I do in the morning is I think about him as part of my morning routine.
How has that changed for you over the last 18 months, the way that you think about him in the morning?
Yeah, in the morning when the initial chunk, you know, I can't tell you how long, weeks, maybe months, it was, you know, I woke up sad. I was deeply sad, heartbroken. You know, I can bring that feeling into my body right now. Mm. And I would wake up just missing, longing, wanting to hold him, wanting to tell him that I loved him, being super attached to physical body. You know, I'm a yoga teacher, and we had a hiccup with our internet, so we're back on track. So I was saying that I teach people, I'm a yoga teacher, I teach people about universal love and oneness, and I've held people's hands when they're terminally ill. I've watched people take their last breath. I was and am to some degree so attached to Dracula's physical body, his form, and I just missed him every day. And what's changed . It's just not as heavy. That heaviness sometimes is lighter. And one of my favorite things to do is tell stories. You know, I just like talking in general, but then for me to tell stories about Dracula, oh God, it's such a delight. Mm-hmm. Or to have people tell me stories about when they met Dracula. You know, Tom, you were talking about all of the, well, a couple of the mystical things that were happening to you when your boy was born. When Dracula died, it was very, very clear that day. He was having a really hard night, and that morning, I sat out on the steps of them. It was kind of a misty gray morning. And I knew, he just said to me, like, this is going to be our last time doing this. Mm-hmm. In this form. Mm-hmm. So that day, my mother, who he loved because she watched him once in a while, just happened to be flying in from Florida. And I was about to leave to pick her up, and I had called my dear friend, Steve Nataraj. And I said, are you around tonight? I think tonight is the night that Dracula is going to die. And he was at the time a nurse that was working night shifts. It was very hard to get a hold of him. And all he said was, yeah, I'm not working, or I'm around tonight. That was it. And then I called my father on the way to pick up my mother, who they're separated. And I said, hey, Dracula, we're going to call the vet to come to the house tonight. Now, Dracula had a heart condition, so he wasn't able to breathe. So essentially his lungs were, he also had lung disease. So his lungs were filling up with fluid. And he would have died a very hard and uncomfortable death. So anyway, I got back from the airport with my mother, and my father pulled up. And a minute later, without me telling Steve to come by, he was at the door with his fiance, Allie. And Michelle, my partner, was with me. And I called up Adriana, who's been on this podcast, who was the original caretaker of Dracula. She was his first parent. And she was available and on FaceTime. And sometimes you have to schedule these things with vets, but this one vet that I called just happened to be on her way back from Hoboken, this place in New Jersey. So she was passing by where I live. So everything felt very quick for sure, but also really lined up in a beautiful way. So Steve, I just had Steve sing Dracula, the Hanuman Chalisa on repeat. And they gave him the injections. And it was so, so sad. But we knew he didn't want to die in the hospital. It was very clear. He had told me multiple times. And the first vet who saved his life when he first had heart failure some eight months prior, who I had taken to him a couple times, she is a friend and a yoga student. She told me that when he was at the vet overnight, he is very uncomfortable, and he did so much better when I would come and get him. So it was very clear that he didn't want to go back to the hospital, and he wanted to die at home. And yeah, that night we laid him out and I slept on the floor. And when we took him to get cremated, you know, people always say, it's not always say this, but like the sun comes out, or you know, a rainbow shines. Not Dracula. There was fucking lightning. he was making a fuss.
Or a show, at least.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, it's been different. You know, I spent 3 months in Mexico, you know, working on a project where I was writing daily about grief and grief awareness and sitting with grief and connecting with nature, being outside, connecting with songs, singing a lot. And I hope one day that some of these writings get compiled into a workbook or a book, or we have some ideas that hopefully will come to life and be a way that we can continue to, or I can continue to make memories and honor Dracula, but also that this work can touch more people. So that's in the works on my end.
Well, you know, like I want to say that when you say you spent 3 months in Mexico and you were working on these projects, writing and singing. And I mean, to me, it's amazing how when that there's this space that opened up in your life when he passed. Yeah, I mean, it was a build to his passing, right? It wasn't mm-hmm. just, you know, it wasn't sudden. You saw this coming, his heart condition. You've been even starting your grieving, you know, sometime before, like quite a bit of time before he actually passed. And then there's this space that opened up. And, you know, I'm just in awe of how, what can be born from that when that space is created.
Yeah. In that moment, Tom, appreciate you saying that. In that moment for me, I might have been able to intellectualize that, but my heart wasn't feeling that.
Totally.
You know, so I just sort of say that for the folks, if they are listening to this and they are grieving, that part of us that like enters into the dark night, it doesn't feel like there's space.
Right.
I just want to honor that for folks that are, you know, as I sit with people who are, and you know this too, Tom, and you're just pointing it out. I think you're making a great observation, but like in those moments, it's like people like, I don't want fucking space right now. I want my fill in the blank.
Yeah. Yeah. The yearning is real. And
yeah.
And also not everyone can go to Mexico for 3 months and write and sing, and very few people can actually do that. So
I was very fortunate to do that. I did lose some jobs in the process of it. So, yeah. You know, I am very, very fortunate for sure. For sure.
Yeah. I mean, some people,
go ahead. What were you saying?
Just to speak to the folks who might be listening to this and being like, shit, I couldn't do that when my grandma died, you know, I had to go to work the next day or whatever.
It's unfortunate that we don't have more grief awareness and ways that we can really take time when we're grieving. Look, my trip to Mexico wasn't planned for 3 months. I'll say that it was planned for a week, and this was in December of 2021. So just for some context, that was a time where the COVID started to kind of go a little bit back up, and I was unsure if I would even have jobs teaching yoga when I got back home. So that was another reason why I was able to stay in Mexico for so long. So I could go on and on and on, and as much as I would love to, I do want us to look at three ways that we can support people who are grieving. And the first being, listen with your heart. Listen with your heart. So when someone is in deep sadness or anger or numbness or frustration or whatever it is that they're feeling with their grief, as a friend, a family member, a partner, a lover, move from, Ram Dass would always tell us this, you move from your head and listen with your heart. And really that goes in line with the next one, is don't try to fix them. Don't try to fix the person who is grieving.
Yeah, I can speak to, as I was listening to you and your experience of describing these last moments with Dracula, you know, I'm consciously bringing attention to my heart center, breathing into my belly, softening that whole space. And with that, I'm receiving, I'm receiving your emotion. And it's just that, I'm just receiving it.
Yeah.
here's Matthew. You know, he's showing me something really special here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thanks for giving an example of how you can do that. Because the other thing, Tom, that we do is we stay in our head, and it's like the mechanic, right? Looking for the tools, looking for the tool. How do I get this done?
Yeah.
Right. The job isn't going to be fixed in the head. Yeah. Right. So that number two is you don't have to try to fix them because they're not broken. Mm-hmm. People who are grieving are not broken. At one time in your life, you will grieve. Now, Francis Weller, if everything in your life that you love will die. I was working with someone once years ago, and they said something to me like, why didn't anybody tell me about this? It's a universal truth. We haven't figured out how to get out of here alive. So there'll be a time when we're heartbroken. You're not broken. And the last thing that you can do to help someone who's grieving is get out of your own way. Sometimes when we're listening to someone, so I imagine if I'm death of my dog, for some folks listening, it might bring up grief that you have with the death or loss of one of your beloved pets, or a grandparent, or a sibling, or a child, or fill in the blank. I know I'm leaving so many things out. But if we want to support someone in that moment, we have to notice our grief. Oh, there it is. You could say, I'm going to give you attention later. You clearly need a little bit of attention. But right now I'm here for Tom. I'm here for Matthew. I'm here for Mom. I'm here for Grandma. I'm here for my partner. So then it just circles back to what Tom was saying, was when you listen to your heart, you're just with them. You're breathing with them. You're witnessing them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and as I watched you move through that emotion, as you described your last moments with Dracula, I was, you know, just purely present for your experience. And when you made it through the other side, then I was, and you talked about what you were creating in that moment, then I'm like, okay, now I can come in and say, hey, isn't that interesting that we can like create in these moments? But you brought us there. You know, that's the difference. And, you know, if you're asking yourself, like, do I step in here and say, like, look at the beauty of this? No, like, not unless the person who you're with is taking you there themselves.
Yeah. Yeah. Great point. And you know, kind of let's say a little bonus, you can always ask. Right. So if it's something like, well, I don't know, am I supposed to give someone a hug? Am I supposed to hold someone's hands? Am I supposed to bring them over food? Can I give you a hug right now? Would you like a hug right now? Maybe do you want to come over later and I can cook for you? Would you like to tell me stories about Dracula? Imagine everyone telling stories about Dracula.
Right. Yeah. And don't be afraid of a no either. I offered a hug the other day and they were like, no. And I was like, okay, cool.
Yeah, it's a great point. Yeah, I think that asking and consent is, you know, we've learned so much about consent. Mm-hmm. And can you believe it took us so long to learn all this about consent?
Right. Yeah, it's still.
But, there's this moment where you might ask someone, hey, do you want a hug? And they say no. There might be a moment where it like that kind of stings a little bit to get rejected. But man, that is going to sting way less than like, you know, trying to hug someone and they don't want it, or they push you away, or then they just say, this person's touching me, I don't want them to. That's way harder than just like you're being a little bruised by saying, no, I don't want one.
Right. And your little bruise isn't much compared to what's happening for that person. And adding, compounding whatever it is that they're feeling with something that's unwanted is rough.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate this call, Tom, and I'm happy that we've gotten to reconnect. And just for the people who listen, our plan is to release some archived episodes in the next few months. And so you may hear us referencing things like in the world that might be a little bit outdated. I believe that there's probably episodes where I talk about Dracula as he was still alive there. It's not another dog Dracula. It's while Dracula was still alive. I feel complete. Tom, do you have anything that you want to end with?
No, I'm just really happy to be here with you and get to hear, you know, get to sit with you in that story and catch everyone up on what's been going on and to get back to it. The work that we've done up to this point it's still creating ripples. People are still listening, still talking about it, still touched by it. And, there's lots more to do. So,
yeah. And there's a lot of cool stuff happening with some of the folks that we've worked with. Mm-hmm. Ethan Sisters team, they're releasing a full length movie about his last days alive. And we'll hopefully get some of those guys on here and those mm-hmm. ladies on here to talk to them. Mm-hmm. So yeah, we've got some really cool stuff planned. If you have any feedback for us, please send us a message. If you can, rate, review, and subscribe on Apple or Spotify, if it lets you do that, please go ahead and do that. And we're looking forward to hearing from you.
Yeah. Thanks for listening. Bye for now.
Bye.